Welcome back into Bullseye on the afternoon here on AM 930 WEOL and 100.3 FM. Andy Bulbarch and Rocco Nushi with you. And it's time now for us to head back to the hotline to bring in a guest that, well, we are very happy to have back. And when you have someone on to start talking a little golf with a little more frequency.
Hey.
Yeah, that gives us the idea that things are kind of sort of slowly getting back where we would like them to be. We welcome in Guy Cipriano, the editor at Golf Course Industry Magazine. Guy, great to talk to you, my friend. How are you?
Well, thanks, Bull and Rocco, for having me. It's always great to talk golf. I just hope that all your listeners in Lorain County are staying safe physically, and also I hope they're mentally staying safe too, and I hope that they're getting outside and taking walks or hikes or runs or bike rides or maybe even playing golf. So, you know, that's the most important thing here, is that everybody's staying safe.
No question about it. Well, Guy, I want to go over a couple of different things here with you. I know you recently took a cross-country trip, and I want to get into that. You played some good golf along the way, so we'll talk about the safety of that. I know that's really kind of on the forefront of the mind of many. And then we'll get into some of these scheduling changes that the PGA Tour has made as well. But let's start with this cross-country trip. I mean, you were all the way out on the West Coast in a remote desert town in California, and then you drove all the way back to Ohio. You just got back a few days ago. Can you explain to us what this experience was like along the way and how things kind of changed as you went from state to state?
Yeah, it was fascinating. So the whole impetus for the trip, Bull and Rocco, was that my sister lives in a remote California desert town called Ridgecrest. My brother-in-law works there as a defense engineer. There's a big naval base there. It's basically UFO land. There's some parts of Jurassic Park out there. So if you're going to do military type work, that's a great place to be. So I had an originally scheduled trip to go out and see them and my niece and nephew, who I had not seen for 13 months, on March 17th. And that was kind of like right in the middle of the month, right? And people weren't sure what's going on. And I debated. I'm like, well, should I go? Should I not go? And I thought, well, it's family. I haven't seen them for 13 months. I don't know when I'm going to get out there again. So I decided to take the flight. I flew into LAX, which is one of the busiest airports in the world. Your listeners that have been there know that that place is always packed. And I knew things were different because, I mean, I obviously follow the news. And it really hit me when I landed at LAX on Tuesday, March 17th, and it was empty. So the plane was maybe a quarter full, 20% full. And then you get to LAX, you go right to baggage claim, you got your bags right away, it was easy to get the rental car. And then my first thing on my itinerary, go figure, was I was going to play 18 holes at a wonderful public course in Ventura County called Rustic Canyon. And I made a tee time there the day before, and I drove up to Ventura County, which anyone that's driven on the 405 and the Santa Monica Expressway, some of those LA roads, you know, that they're some of the worst in the nation traffic-wise. And I got up to Ventura County. Moore Park is where this great course was located. And it only took me 45 minutes. And with traffic, you're looking at an hour and a half to 2 hours. But then got to the golf course, and it was packed. I mean, it was business as usual. You just started hearing some things about the measures golf was taking to handle COVID-19. But you didn't really see them at Rustic Canyon yet. There were still flags in the cups. There were still bunker rakes out. There were still people riding two to a cart. And this is one of the most popular public courses in Southern California. So it was a Tuesday, nice weather, you know, in the mid-60s. So it was packed. And then get to my sister's that night. And a few days later, California Governor Gavin Newsom issued a shelter-in-place order. At that point, I'm thinking, this is kind of interesting. I'm out here. And then I think it was around the same time, I think a day later, Mike DeWine issued his shelter-in-place order for Ohio. So at that point, we had the option of working remotely. I'm pretty fortunate. I can do my job from wherever. So I'm like, well, I'm out here with family. You know, I haven't seen my four-year-old nephew and then six-year-old niece in 13 months. I'm just going to stay another week and do my job out here. I had a rental car, and it was kind of cool. I got to spend my niece's seventh birthday with her, and I never got to spend a birthday with a niece or nephew. And then you got the end of the two-week period. I'm like, I had a flight booked home from LAX, but I'm like, I don't really want to go back to Los Angeles. I don't know if that's the safest thing. That's a hot spot. That's a heavily populated area. I just didn't feel right about it. And Las Vegas would have been another option to fly out of. It's about 4 hours from where she lives. LA is about 2.5 hours. I'm like, no, that's not the right option either. So I decided to drive it. There were two different routes you could go. You could go through the, you could go a little bit north through Utah and then Interstate 80 through the Rocky Mountains in Nebraska. And I decided to take the other way, which was about 90 miles longer. And when you're going across the country, what's a different 90 mile? What does another 90 miles make, right? So I went through Interstate 40 through Arizona, New Mexico, the Texas Panhandle, and then into Oklahoma, and then cut Interstate 44 and took that through northeast Oklahoma and Missouri, and then onto Interstate 70 through Illinois, Indiana, and then into Ohio. And I'm glad I went that way. It took 4 days, and you know, it was purely driven by safety concerns. And I was actually scheduled to go on vacation those days anyway. I was supposed to take a Myrtle Beach golf trip with friends, which got shelved. So I had the time, and I had my clubs with me because I flew Southwest. And you know, anyone that plays golf, whenever you fly Southwest, you get 2 free bags. You might as well bring your golf bag. You never know what you might run into if you have some spare time. And along the way, I just played random 9-hole rounds. I stopped at 6 different golf courses, 2 in Arizona, 3 in Missouri, and 1 in Indiana. I didn't make any – I had tee times. I kind of just did it on a whim. I would type the golf nearby function into my app, and I played some courses that probably your listeners had never heard of that were – just absolutely amazing, and for most of the time I was the only one out there on some of them. So it was one of those trips that, like I said, purely driven by safety and health concerns, and not even so much for myself. I just didn't want to bring it back. I live with my girlfriend. You know, I always go and check on my mom, who lives in Avon Lake, and I just was more concerned, you know, for them than myself, and driving just felt like the right thing to do, and I'm glad that I did it, because in this odd circumstance, I had a trip that I'll always remember. And part of you feels guilty for doing it. You're out driving across the country, playing golf, doing some hiking. You know, it sounds glamorous, but like I said, I don't know if you guys have ever driven across the country. It's a long haul, and you know, I stopped on 4 different nights, and you know, I didn't try to do the whole, you know, 900 miles in one day thing. I tried to enjoy and see some sights, but a lot of the sights were closed too.
Yeah, very true. That's a lot of driving. Can't say I've ever made a cross-country trek myself, but definitely sounds fun. On top of the, you know, hefty amount of driving there, sounds like you got a lot of great golf in as well, and obviously with courses being open, that's been a little bit of a hot topic. Were your experiences with different safety precautions taken in at different courses, you know, were they good experiences, bad experiences? Are the things that courses are doing to maintain social distancing enough? Where do you stand on all of that?
Oh, they were overwhelmingly positive, Rocco. The safest places I've felt are on golf courses. I even feel safer on a golf course than running on the sidewalk or going to a hiking trail or park, because wow, there's just more distance in a golf course. More people are spread out. I prefer to walk when I play anyway, so it's not like I'm going to share a cart with anyone. Golf courses had sanitizers by the pro shop. Some just had honor boxes. I played one in California that had an honors box, or if your listeners don't know what that is, you basically, nobody works there besides the maintenance people in the morning. You just go and put your $10 or $20 or $5 into a box and go play, and it's completely, you know, golf is a game of honor, so why should it not be that at the cash register too sometimes? And played one in Arizona that had the same thing, and like I said, none of my golf rounds were planned. It was kind of where I was in the day and what the weather was like. Friday, it was really windy. In fact, last Friday, I woke up in Amarillo, Texas. It was 22 degrees out with 27-mile-an-hour winds. Can you imagine that, Texas in April with those temperatures? And I drove through Oklahoma that day, too, and didn't get to play any golf because the temperatures were around freezing the entire day. And I come to find out it was 65 in northeast Ohio, I think, on Friday, or close to that. So I could have played more golf in there than I did down there. But I guess today it's like 90 degrees in Amarillo, Texas. So talk about that, you know, 70-degree split within a week. But no, I felt, Rocco, to answer your question, I felt safe. Golf courses are doing really smart things, limiting the amount of people in a cart to 1, trying to promote walk, have people walk instead. There's different ways to handle contact at the cup. So some courses have foam coming up and you just grab your ball out and the flag stick's still in. Some have raised cups with no flag stick in. Some have a backward cup with like maybe maybe just 4 inches of the flag sawed off so you can see it from the fairway. So it varies course to course. Bunker rakes are out everywhere I went besides the course that I played on March 17th, which if that course is still open now, you know, California, it's kind of up to municipalities. I guarantee you they don't have bunker rakes out there anymore. Hand sanitizer at the places where you had to go in the pro shops. Played a course in Missouri, the Bill and Payne Stewart golf course, where they only let six people into the pro shop on the at a time. Of course, on a Saturday morning at 10 a.m. when it's 37 degrees and raining, well, the only idiot out on the golf course is the one driving across the country trying to squeeze in as many nine holes as possible. So really, I made the comment to you guys off air, so I got back late Sunday night and Monday made a grocery store run here in Northeast Ohio, and I came within 10 feet of more people at the grocery store in 20 minutes here in Northeast Ohio than I did on a 4-day, 2,300-mile drive across the country.
Well, that's saying a lot right there, and I think that says a lot about just how safe golfing is at this point as well.
So I did go through. The biggest cities that I drove through were Oklahoma City, Tulsa, and St. Louis. And I didn't stop in St. Louis, but that crappy weather day last Friday, I did stop in Oklahoma City and Tulsa because I was going to try to play golf and the weather just the entire day was just bad. So I did a 4-mile run through Oklahoma City downtown and then a 7-mile run through downtown Tulsa. What a cool way to see a city running around it with nobody in it. But it was also really hit me. I think that was the day it hit me more than any other what's going on in the country, because that was Friday afternoon. It was like around 1 p.m. in Oklahoma City and 5 p.m. in Tulsa. You know, there would have been people out in traffic and, you know, maybe people going to happy hour or, you know, Bricktown in Oklahoma City is a really popular place, and that was completely empty. So that was the day where it really hit me the most. And then I guess it would have been Saturday into Sunday. I looked at the map because I went to Indiana University, and I was like, I wonder how far Bloomington, Indiana is out of the way. And it was like maybe 50 miles round trip out of my way. So I'm like, what the heck? I'll stay Saturday night in Bloomington, Indiana. I've not been back to my alma mater since 2007, but I covered a Penn State football game there against Indiana. And it really hit me when that Saturday night I get to Bloomington, Indiana at 11:30 p.m., you know, go through downtown Bloomington. Just imagine what a college town would have been like on the first Saturday in May and completely empty. And then ran around the campus the following morning and saw one person carrying a backpack on Sunday morning and maybe seven other runners in an hour and a half through a major college campus.
Again, we're speaking with Guy Cipriano, editor at Golf Course Industry Magazine. He's our guest here on Bullseye on the Afternoon. All right, Guy, PGA Tour really kind of became the first big sports entity to make some changes on their calendar, a lot of changes, and there will be a lot of events redirected in the summer and, of course, into the fall. What are your thoughts on some of these changes that the PGA Tour has made so far? Do you like these changes, and do you think that some of this could work in the short term, even if they don't have many spectators?
Well, Bull and Rocco, if any of these events that have been rescheduled get played, then what's not to like? That would be a huge positive in a year that obviously has had a major negative here at the start of the second quarter of the year. And I think it'll be great if these get played. I mean, who cares whether the Masters is in April or November in this type of situation? If they can somehow play it in November, which is a great time to play golf in Georgia, by the way, you know, they're going to have to adjust some of their agronomics and maybe move up their overseed, and you'll see some different foliage and shrubbery than you usually do. But I mean, how cool would that be if they played a different time of year and do actually play a Masters this year after it was postponed from what it would have been this week? I mean, this would have been Masters Tuesday or Wednesday. Guys, we would have been talking about who's going to win the Masters or whether Tiger can repeat. Now we're talking about it being in November, and the fact that we're talking about it possibly being played this year at all, to me, is a giant positive. And then the United States Open. I was at Wingfoot Golf Club last week. That's at the epicenter of COVID-19 right now. And what an uplifting thing that would be if they can actually play that event at the site they were supposed to play it at in September. And that's a great time to play golf in the Northeast. I don't think you'll be quite at 100% foliage, but it'll certainly be different than June, and the temperatures might be a little bit cooler, and who knows, maybe the agronomists and the setup people can push the U.S. Open greens even more without the stress of the mid-June heat. So you'll see a bit of a different golf course if that gets played. And then the PGA Championship going from May to August, that really won't be a huge difference because San Francisco's pretty consistent weather year-round. So that'll be the one that's probably least affected with conditions-wise if that one gets played. But, I mean, what a wonderful thing. And, yeah, the FedEx Cup playoffs are going to be in August if this schedule goes. But the thing that really fascinated me, Bull and Rocco, is you have the U.S. Open now scheduled for September 17th to the 20th. And you know it's the following weekend?
I believe that would be the Ryder Cup, right?
The Ryder Cup.
Yeah.
So how awesome would that be if that goes down, having the U.S. Open followed by the Ryder Cup? I know it's football season, and it's impossible to compete with the NFL head-to-head or even college football in some cases. But for us, people that are golf-first or live on what I call planet golf, I mean, how exciting is that going to be? And it's really going to be a season unlike any other if it goes down. And to salvage any part of the season would be huge. And you know, what's not to like about the fact that we're even talking about the possibility of major golf tournaments that were postponed that might get played? And another thing we should mention is that the U.S. Women's Open was supposed to be at the end of May, and now that's scheduled for December 10th to the 13th, which that's a great time to have the U.S. Women's Open because it's not before the U.S. Men's Open. It's not between the U.S. Men's Open and PGA Championship. So if you're looking to get some attention for women's golf, especially here in the United States, I mean, it's huge in parts of Asia and Europe, but that might be a great time for the U.S. Women's Open to get attention that it normally wouldn't. And Houston, it's at Champions Golf Club in Houston, Texas, and I would say that mid-December in Houston is a lot better than being outside in late May in Houston, Texas.
Yeah, that seems to make a heck of a lot of sense. And, you know, I'm interested to see how all this works out because I think there are some changes that will take place here. Some of them could go over so extraordinarily well that you wonder if maybe the PGA Tour considers making some of these changes a little more permanent.
Yeah, the one that I'm curious to see is the TV ratings for the PGA Championship if that gets played in August. Because if you remember, 2018 was supposed to be the last PGA Championship played in August. I remember leaving Belrive and spending part of that week there outside St. Louis thinking, hey, it's done. You know, it's in May now. And I went to Bethpage last year and it was in May. And lo and behold, you know, I guess we didn't play the last PGA Championship in August. It's back to that time slot. It's going to be in early August. And I'll be really curious to see what the TV ratings are going to be for that and the buzz that will get, because that'll be the first golf major played in 13 months. The Open Championship, the British Open, of course, is being canceled this year, but that was the last major golf championship played, and that was last July. So it'll have been 13 months between majors if this schedule happens. And the PGA Championship, I'll just be fascinated to see what type of buzz and exposure and TV ratings that gets in early August, because that could be the first, you know, who knows what's going to happen with the NBA playoffs and the NHL playoffs, but that could be the first really major individual sporting event played following this pandemic. If you think about it, the Olympics are postponed till next year. The French Open is postponed till the fall. They're not doing Wimbledon this year. So that could be actually mark the return of big sporting events there in early August.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see how all of this plays out. But, you know, we were at least encouraged by the idea that at least some major sporting entity was making some sort of a decision, giving us a schedule to look forward to. And hopefully it's a schedule that they can stick to as well. Guy, we appreciate the time as always, my friend. Always great catching up. And we will definitely do this again soon because there are certainly going to be a lot more questions about the game of golf and, of course, about the PGA Tour as well, because this will be a different look with a different schedule, and some of that could end up being a good thing.
Well, thanks, Bull and Rocco, for having me. It's always great to talk golf. And, again, hopefully everybody in Lorain County and beyond is staying safe.
We appreciate that, Guy. We hope you are staying safe as well. Again, that's Guy Cipriano, editor at Golf Course Industry Magazine, joining us here on Bullseye on the Afternoon. We need to step aside and take a break. Rocco and I will come back after this here on AM 930 WEOL and 100.3 FM.